DC sports fans start their day with 106.7 The Fan's Sports Junkies.
Let Jaden cook.
With Commanders Talk.
They were 60 minutes away from the Super Bowl last year, and they're better this year.
And a lot of fun.
You're acting like I haven't been embarrassed in my life before. Right.
Every morning from 6 to 10.
I thought I handled myself with incredible maturity.
If you missed it live, listen to 106.7 The Fan's Sports Junkies on Apple Podcasts, Spotify.
They're listening to everything you do.
Or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Sports Talk here on the Big 870 WWL. Mike Dettea along with Charlie Long. Steve Geller will join us at 5:45 for our triple option feature. A little after 5:20 this afternoon, Mark Schlereth from Odyssey Sports. He's on the NFL on Fox, covered Jacksonville, Carolina last week. And we'll find out where Mark's going this week, and he'll talk to us all across the NFL. Hey, we believe in the power of everywhere. Listen to WWL anytime, anywhere. Get the WWL shows you love. If it's Dave Cohen, Tommy Tucker, Newell, Scoot, us here on Sports Talk, and all the local content you crave on the Odyssey, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn apps. Charlie, big weekend for LSU, certainly, and I can tell when I start to get texts and people, can you do a show Thursday? Can you do a show Friday? Can you do a show Saturday morning? I know you got okay, I get it. And that's starting to kind of roll up as LSU plays Florida. Certainly a huge game for Florida because of what happened last week and them losing to South Florida late when they had them by the teriyaki and just let them loose. And, okay, you got a guy spit on another player. Come on. That Jalen Carter thing, other guys, you know, you see it and it happens in college, in high school too. Really totally disrespectful to do that sort of thing. So, man, it's a huge game for Billy Napier and Florida. Huge game certainly for LSU, who did not play well on offense against Louisiana Tech. The thing here in this game, and I think everybody's going to be watching that injury report, but not having Braylon Moore. He goes down after one play. You saw his importance. Did that offense look the same without their starting center? DJ Chester, okay, I know Coach, you know, he wants to kind of pump him up and get him ready and everything else. But DJ Chester, again, struggled with a lot of missed assignments mentally. He was out of position, sometimes off balance. Man, Braylon Moore, he reminds me so much of Todd McClure. I saw Todd McClure play at LSU. Then he went on to the NFL, had a really nice career there. Braylon Moore not being in that lineup. And when you got a high ankle sprain, that's not something you normally come back from, you know, in 4 days or 5 days. That's normally a couple-week injury, 3 weeks at the minimum, 5 weeks long-term, depending on the injury. And now, so not having Tre'Davious Green, that line opened up at 9.5.
Yeah.
Charlie, it ain't staying that way. Because if Braylon Moore doesn't play, I think that's a major impact for LSU's offensive line. The other part is, if you go back last year, the Alabama game you almost got to throw out. Alabama just completely, I mean, they beat the stew out of LSU. The one team that played Garrett Nussmeier better than any other than Alabama, defensively, was Florida. And they were on a hot roll late in the year. And they took it to LSU. Really did physically took it to them. They took away a lot of the passing lanes that Nussmeier wanted to get the ball downfield. LSU could run the football. I think this is a close game between the Gators and LSU.
So a couple things here, Mike. I guess we'll start with the Gators defense versus LSU's offense, and then we'll kind of get into DJ Lagway and the Gator offense. A lot to preview here with LSU versus Florida. Ron Roberts, once again, the DC yep. of Florida. And Coach Kelly in his presser on Monday talked a lot about it, Mike, that he's expecting to see a lot more 3-3-5 looks from the Florida Gator defense like they saw from La Tech because LSU didn't handle it very well, especially in the run game. I know that LSU broke off a couple major runs for 40-plus yards. Harlan Berry had a really nice one. But really, if you take those out, which I hate doing because everything counts, they had about 37 rushing yards on like 32 attempts. the rushing attack has been inconsistent at best early on in the season. Coach Kelly obviously talked about that. But going up against Ron Roberts and that Florida defense, you have to be balanced. You have to be able to run the football. That's something that, you know, USF really stuck with in that upset victory over Florida. And that's part of the reason why Florida wasn't able to kind of pull out that win late, is that Florida, I mean, their defense, if you're kept off balance, right, but with LSU's offense this upcoming weekend, they got to be able to get a run game going, because it just hasn't been consistent early on. And against Ron Roberts' defense, if you're just asking Garrett Nussmeier to do everything, I don't think that's a formula for success.
One thing with Ron Roberts, you're going to see more than one look. Man,
right.
Coach Roberts is going to show you a couple different looks at it with that. And he saw, again, as you pointed out, Tech had some success with it. I think he's going to bring extra men in the box. He does not think LSU is going to blow him off the line of scrimmage. You look at Florida's front. They are a big physical front along their defensive line. They have athletic linebackers. Yeah, the defense gave up some big plays late, and you had the dumb penalty. But the defense played well enough to win. Okay, the offense, they went up and down the field, and they couldn't score touchdowns.
Right.
That's on Lagway. Okay? He had some open receivers that he flat-out missed downfield. So defensively, I think this will be a pretty tight game, and I think a fairly low-scoring game. Because you're playing into both teams' strength here. What Ron Roberts has done with the defense for Florida, and you see what Blake Baker has done with LSU's defense. The key is which one of the QBs can get in the rhythm and hit the pass downfield. The one thing with that 3-3-5 defense is they give you a couple of holes and angles to get the ball in. And can Garrett get it downfield? He struggled with it last year. He really struggled with finding that open guy downfield. But they're going to give you a couple different looks. With Lagway, I know he's had some injuries. And Charlie, just looking at him on the surface, looks as though something's not quite right with him physically. From a year ago, when he got on that stretch late where he really dug Florida out of the jam. They were, because when Mertz went down, Graham Mertz went down, you said, uh-oh. And he struggled early on, but he got in the groove. He is so poised for a young man. He did that as a true freshman last year. You see why he was a five-star recruit, considered one of the top two quarterbacks in the country. They have a good running game. Their problem is somewhat similar to LSU. I think offensive line, they're not a real physical unit to blow people off the line of scrimmage, to give their running backs an opportunity to get to the second level. And they have struggled that bit. Boy, you saw South Florida. They attacked them not only off the edges, but sending people right down the chute to get Lagway. And I wouldn't consider him a runner. He can get out of the way in pressure, but he's not what I would consider a running quarterback.
Like a dual threat, like a Lenora Sellers type of thing.
He wants to stay in the pocket and throw it downfield. That's what he wants to do as a quarterback. So it's a great chess game. Having him in Tiger Stadium is a big advantage, because last year they were in the swamp, and man, it was tough. And Garrett talked about, man, the noise level was so loud there in the communication part. So, you know, Tiger Stadium got to bring it that game. I think this is a close game, a low-scoring game, defensive-oriented. It's not about who makes the big play, Charlie. Who makes the big mistake?
Right. And my go ahead.
Who makes the interception that turns the Florida game? Or maybe you create a turnover, as a fumble or in special teams. That to me is going to be a big part of this game. I think it's going to be low scoring. And again, both teams dominating on defense.
One other thing that I want to mention before we get to stink here, Mike, is that LSU's run defense has been really solid early on in the season against Clemson. I know that Clemson had running back concerns entering the year. And then against La Tech, again, they were pretty good in run defense as well. Florida's rushing attack with Jaden Ball is going to be interesting. That was a player that, you know, Coach Kelly had highlighted as being a very, very physical back early on in the season. He's got double the more than any other running back as far as carries goes. He's got 27 with 197 yards through the first 2 weeks, 7.3 yards per carry. when Florida's offense was working against USF last week, Mike, they were able to run the ball. And they went away from it late, especially in the fourth quarter, where they really just put everything on DJ Lagway to end that game. And I thought that was a mistake by Coach Napier and the Florida Gators offensive staff. Because Jaden Ball can be, I don't want to say a game wrecker, but he can be a really, really strong presence that can just beat over a defense if you have to tackle him time after time again.
Okay, Charlie, you were at University of Louisiana out in Lafayette.
Yeah.
When Billy won, how did he win on offense?
He ran the
three running backs.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about Elijah Mitchell and Trey Regis and all these other guys. It was always at least a two-headed running back room, if not a three-headed running back room. And multiple times when Billy was at UL, you would see the Cajuns winning games with 300-plus rushing yards, 250-plus rushing yards. I think that's what they want to do. But, you know, when you have such a talented quarterback like DJ Lagway, I think that's why maybe they went away from it at times. And it just kind of hurts themselves, Mike, because they do have a really talented back in Ball. At the same time, that talented back going against LSU's run defense, which has been really good, is something that I'm going to be watching as well.
Yeah, and when Billy's the play caller, boy, he's catching some heat because he didn't make that change in the offseason. A lot of people who were Gator fans were saying, oh, he got to bring in an offensive coordinator that can call plays. And Billy said, no, I'm going to handle it. He's catching heat again. Based off what happened from midway in the third quarter until the end of the game, man, that offensive play calling was all over the board against a not dynamic South Florida offense. You knew they weren't going to score a ton of points. You knew it. But you could not turn those possessions into getting 6 points. Field goal or a punt.
Penalties really hurt them too, Mike.
And penalties were awful against South Florida. When we come back, we'll have on with us from Odyssey Sports and also from the NFL on Fox. Mark Schlereth will join us talking about NFL, Saints, all across the board right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL.
D.C. sports fans start their day with 106.7 The Fan's Sports Junkies.
Let Jaden cook.
With Commanders Talk.
They were 60 minutes away from the Super Bowl last year, and they're better this year.
And a lot of fun.
You're acting like I haven't been embarrassed in my life before. Right.
Every morning from 6 to 10.
I thought I handled myself with incredible maturity.
If you missed it live, listen to 106.7 The Fan's Sports Junkies on Apple Podcasts, Spotify.
They're listening to everything you do.
Or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL, Mike Dettelier along with Charlie Long. We're going to go to our Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line, and we're joined by Odyssey NFL insider Mark Schlereth, host of the Stinkin' Truth podcast. Insider calls are brought to you by Nationwide for your insurance and financial needs. Nationwide is on your side. Mark, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
You got it, my friend. How are you guys?
Doing great, doing great. Mark, right off the bat, I'll ask you about the 49ers who, man, this seems to be a repeat scenario from a year ago. All the injuries, George Kittle down at least 4 weeks with the hamstring injury. And then all of a sudden now Brock Purdy's got a shoulder and a turf toe injury. I would say he's probably questionable. Just by the way the line moved from 6.5 to 4.5, I think Vegas figures we're going to see Mac Jones. They didn't do the Saints any favor when they cut Jake Moody. I mean, Jake is a guy, third-round pick, didn't work out at kicker, and then they bring in Eddie Pinheiro. And Eddie's had some success, certainly, in the NFL, kicking with the Panthers. But this is a team sort of beat up. We saw McCaffrey leave a couple times. Trent Williams went to the tent. Mark, it's almost like this. We watched this same movie last year with the 49ers. The Saints legitimately got a shot this week. Legitimate with all the injuries the 49ers have.
Yeah, I don't know what's going. I don't know what's going on with that, and why they have consistently been so injured. Because at some point you got to look at what you're doing, the way you're working, the way you're the way you're operating as a franchise. You know, I know here in Denver, and you guys are very familiar, obviously, there in New Orleans with Sean Payton. But that's one of the things Sean talks about all the time. Denver went from one of the most injured teams in football before Sean got there to one of the least injured teams the last 2 years under Sean. So there's something to the way you train, the way you prepare, the way you practice. There's something to it. Now, some of it is just, good fortune, but certainly in San Francisco, there's got to be something going on there that just is not, you know, just not keeping guys healthy for whatever reason. I don't know. I don't know what that is, but it certainly seems that way.
Last week, you did Jacksonville and Carolina, and we talked a little bit about this. You know, Jacksonville's one of those teams I wouldn't sleep too much on. I mean, they got some talent there, and, you know, Trevor Lawrence, I think, will certainly benefit with Lee and Cohen. But, man, their defense got after the Panthers Sunday, really got after them.
Yeah, no question. And then, you know, I think the one big question mark is Bryce Young really an NFL quarterback? And, you know, we can sit there, and I talked about this because it's a storyline, right? Last year, the way he finished the season, 7 TDs, no interceptions, the last three games, 1-2 of the last three, and, you know, played Kansas City in there and played him pretty tough. And you're looking at that going, oh, okay, you know what? That, I mean, you know, like maybe he's turned the corner. And then yesterday, just like the last other, you know, the other two times the season starters, he was in New Orleans last year. Remember how bad that was? You know, I called that game in New Orleans, and I called this game, and he's just, I mean, it was bad. But it's not just him. It's other guys. Like, Leggett was just a no-show. Like, I mean, he made some – he refused to block a couple times. It was just, like, it's one of those things, like, listen, you guys as a franchise, and you're rebuilding your roster, you don't have the room for error. You can't make mistakes, right? You don't have enough talent to overcome mistakes like that. And it was consistent, not only the quarterback, but other players as well making those mistakes. And I'm 100% with you on Jacksonville, man. I picked them. When I started looking at the preseason tape, I changed my pick from Houston to Jacksonville to win that division, because what I saw on tape was like, wow. And I got confirmation on practice. I'll tell you one thing, Tony Boselli, now the executive vice president of football operations, and he just flat out said, man, like, I questioned the toughness and our ability to respond to, you know, over the last few years, our ability to respond to adversity. And he goes, that's my number one question. I want tough dudes that are smart. So free agency, we didn't go after the, you know, the top guys on the list, you know, the top most. We went after really good football players who are tough, hard-nosed guys who are smart and can communicate. And I think you saw that on Sunday. I think you saw what I think the Jacksonville Jaguars are going to be. And it started with their head coach on the first drive from his own 37-yard line going for it on fourth down and two. I mean, you know, you want to talk about forget Liam Cohen. It's Liam Cajones. That dude, like, that's a gutsy call.
Mark, I don't know if you could have asked for any better. You see the quarterback play in week one. Okay, the first game. Dak Prescott couldn't have played any better than what he did Thursday night. Now, CeeDee Lamb's got to make some of those catches. Jalen Hurts, what he did, I think he's underrated because they know what they can do with him. And it's nothing that jumps out at you. But he's a winner. There is something about that. Then Justin Herbert, well, we watched him Friday night go up against Mahomes. And then throughout the day, Justin Fields, that was the biggest surprise for me all day long to see what he did against that defense of the Steelers. I thought Aaron Rodgers played well, and we saw it throughout the day. And then Sunday night, okay, Lamar Jackson was out of this world. And then Josh Allen was, hey, hold my beer for just a second. I'm going to show you something here of what I got. You could not have asked if you're the NFL to watch what you watched in week one and in the fourth quarter of J.J. McCarthy, of what he did last night against the Bears, who would look as though they had him. They had him by the teriyaki for three quarters. And he comes in there in the fourth quarter, lights it up, and then he uses his legs to get a score. This is what the NFL wants, to see that.
Yeah, you know, you're not going to get any argument from me. And that Baltimore game, you know, it's the criticism I've had with Baltimore over the course of the years is they have just dominated the regular season and then get into the playoffs and or get into tight situations and just completely lose their identity. You know, it's really interesting. They've got a 40-25 lead and the Buffalo Bills score to make it, you know, however it went down, but the very first play of the game, it's 40-25, fourth quarter, 4 minutes, right? They get the ball. they scramble. It's you know, it's our guy Derrick Henry fumbles, and they get the, you know, it's Ed Oliver that punches it out. They get the ball. They go in to score to make it, what, 40-38, right? And, you know, the first play of that drive, was a, you know, was a scramble by Lamar Jackson, and he gets 13 yards. And so then you fumble, they score, they make it 40-38, and all of a sudden, what do? You hand it to Derrick Henry. I'm all for that, right? He gets like 3.5 yards. Then you run a jet sweep. So you're taking a receiver who doesn't run, you know, isn't used to running in traffic, and you're giving him the jet sweep to capture the edge into the sideline, and you know you got to stop, right? You know you got to fall down. And I'm like, what are you guys doing? And then Lamar drops back. And so you took it out of number eight's hands, and you never gave him an opportunity to run the ball, you know, a run pass option, whatever. I just, like, I looked at that, and then you end up punting. I looked at that drive and like, what are we doing? What are you doing if you're the Baltimore Ravens? And, you know, it gets into those points where, to me, you just kind of lose your identity trying to trick people instead of just bludgeoning people. Like, I don't understand that, because that's who they are as, you know, as a football team. I don't understand that aspect of coaching. So it just, that stuff blows me away.
Insider Calls with Mark Slareff are brought to you by Nationwide for your insurance and financial needs. Nationwide is on your side. Charlie?
You know, Mark, I want to look a little bit ahead to week two here. The Chargers and the Raiders game on Monday Night Football has instantly become way more intriguing after what we saw in week one. Like, the Chargers go to Brazil and pick up a huge win over the Chiefs, where I think a lot of people were maybe a little bit down on them after the Rashawn Slater news, where he signs that mega deal at left tackle and then he gets injured immediately out for the season. They move Joe Alt over to left tackle, and you can kind of understand why Coach Harbaugh was talking about how they view offensive linemen as weapons when they took him fifth overall a couple years back. And then the Raiders in their new era with Pete Carroll. Geno Smith had an awesome debut against the Patriots, and Mike Vrabel's debut there as well. So the Raiders and the Chargers, two teams in the AFC West, maybe there's a power balance shift here. I don't want to kind of overstate myself because, you know, the Chiefs still have Pat Mahomes and Andy Reid. But starting off 0-1, and then all these other three teams in the division start 1-0, and those two teams going at it on Monday night.
Yeah, the Chiefs are in last place. Let that sink in. Because it sounds great to me. It sounds awesome. You know what? What the Chargers did Friday night against the Chiefs, the way they orchestrated and operated, I thought Justin Herbert looked exceptional in that game. He made some throws in that game that were just like otherworldly type throws. He showed some toughness, you know, and ultimately, you know, we keep looking at the Chargers, and, you know, the old kind of adage for me is the Chargers are going to Chargers. They're going to find a way, you know, to beat the Chargers and lose. And I thought that was a big time performance by the Chargers. I thought it was a big time performance by Justin Herbert. I thought, man, he looked phenomenal. And so now they're going to face the Raiders. And as you mentioned, the Raiders look pretty good. I will tell you this about Pete Carroll. It's important to have people that believe in you. And one thing, when Pete Carroll was coaching Seattle, and, you know, and Geno Smith went over there, man, Pete Carroll raved. I sat for 15 minutes on the field pregame with Pete. They were playing in San Francisco, and he just raved about Geno Smith and what Geno Smith brought and his ability and his arm talent, his ability to spin the ball. And you can see how that relationship has continued to evolve. Geno was super sharp against the Patriots. They get that victory. That's a great game. This is a great – I mean, the Broncos' defense was exceptional, just exceptional. And offensively, Bo Nix played, you know, a way below average game. And they made some mistakes on the offensive side of the ball, but – listen, if they start to kind of progress like they did last year toward the end of the season with Bo Nix, the Broncos clearly, to me, have the best defense in that division. I mean, this thing is going to be a race, just an unbelievable race in the AFC West.
Mark, I was talking to Coach Ogeron the other day, and he was laughing about, man, all these people talking about Pete Carroll can't coach no more. He said, hey, I'm just telling you, he might be 74, but he got the mind of a 44-year-old. he can still coach and get teams ready. He said, I just hope, you know, the right spot's there and Geno can be the trigger man for him. And we saw with Geno and, you know, eventually Ashton Jeanty is going to be a much bigger part of that attack offensively running the football.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. I think I know one thing about Mike Vrabel is, like, it's a badge of honor. You're not going to run it against us, you know, and that's something that Vrabel believes in. And, you know, he used all his assets to shut down that run game, and they did it, but Geno Smith got him over the top. And so, like I'm 100% with that thought process on Pete Carroll. Pete Carroll can coach. Pete Carroll creates an environment of, you know, just physicality, hard-nosed, but having fun and competition. And competing is fun, man. And he takes that environment, you know, that hard-nosed kind of competition environment, and he gets his players to adhere to that and practice that way and meet that way and compete that way. And it certainly is infectious, and it certainly rubs off on their football team when it comes to game day. Like, that's the whole thing. You know, he's got themes every day. Today's competition Wednesday. Today's this, that, the other. And it's the way they practice. I did preseason game for them 2 years ago or so. And I just spent like 3 days around the facility and, you know, being part of the kind of just the fabric of the facility of the cafeteria. I was working out in the weight room. I was floating around, just checking it out. Everything is about competing. And I think it's one of the reasons you'll see the Raiders take a big step forward under Pete Carroll.
Mark, last question for you. We saw the Packers. I mean, and they looked – that game wasn't close against the Lions. They bludgeoned them. They got after them on both sides of the football, moving people off the line of scrimmage. Jordan Love, who had missed a big part of the preseason because of the left thumb injury, which got operated on. But, man, they looked really, really good. And for the Lions – the strength of their team had always been their offensive line. But their interior line, you lose Ragnar, you have some pieces moving there. It didn't look the same, and you could tell. That's exactly where the Packers attacked them. Their deal is, prove it to me that those guys are as good as what you used to have, and it wasn't the case.
No, it wasn't. The other thing is they got away from their two-back sets, their 21 pony personnel, where they both have Gibbs and Montgomery on the field at the same time and using those guys to complement one another. And I thought they got away from a lot of that they had a lot of success with the year before. And you're right about the offensive line. And on the flip side of that, man, I mean, in that first half, Love just stood back in the pocket and he had all day to throw the ball. And those young rookie receivers and that young tight end, man, they cut the Detroit Lions up, and the Lions had no answer and they had no pressure on Jordan Love, and Jordan Love looked sharp. And then flip it on the defensive side of the ball, and how about Micah Parsons being a part-time player, rushing the edge, keeping him fresh? That, I don't know what the mixture was, but whatever it was, man, that dude was flying around trying to prove that the Packers made a great decision, and he did, because every time he was on the field, man, my antenna went off. Like, he was just all over the place, which is so much fun to watch. So, you know, good for the Green Bay Packers. As soon as I got my Micah Parsons, I changed my pick from Detroit winning that division to the Packers winning that division, and I'm telling you what, the Packers look like a dominant football team.
Mark, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Always love when you're on. Great insights, and you know, you get to the point with it. So we thank you so much for joining us each and every Tuesday.
You got it, guys. Be well.
Thanks, Mark.
All righty. That was Odyssey NFL Insider Mark Schlereff, host of the Stinkin' Truth podcast. Insider calls are brought to you by Nationwide. For your insurance and financial needs, Nationwide is on your side. When we come back, Triple Option, myself, along with Charlie Long, Steve Geller, right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL.
D.C. sports fans start their day with 106.7 The Fan's Sports Junkies.
Let Jaden cook.
With Commanders Talk.
They were 60 minutes away from the Super Bowl last year, and they're better this year.
And a lot of fun.
You're acting like I haven't been embarrassed in my life before. Right.
Every morning from 6 to 10.
I thought I handled myself with incredible maturity.
If you missed it live, listen to 106.7 The Fan's Sports Junkies on Apple Podcasts, Spotify.
They're listening to everything you do.
Or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL, it's our triple option feature. Myself along with Steve Geller and Charlie Long. We talked a little bit about this in the first part of the show about Jack Stahl getting put on the regular 53-man roster. And, you know, Jack does some things that you're not going to pick him for fantasy football because he does the dirty work. He's the blocker. He does a nice job in pass protection. He's always been known as a really good inline blocker. But in short yarded situations, he could also be used as your blocking fullback. I think all of us sort of thought, Steve, to be honest with you, I know Bobby said the same thing to me when I brought it up, that he would make the 53-man squad initially.
I'm with you.
Didn't happen. Got put, you know, on the practice squad, but now he's back up on the regular 53-man roster. This team is sort of light at tight end. And so bringing Jack Stahl back, he's not going to be the headline-grabbing guy. But he does a lot of the dirty work to get some of the things done up front, especially to upgrade your running game.
And definitely has some experience with Kellen Moore in Philadelphia last year.
Yeah, no question about it. I think he got cut loose. I think they were trying to put him back on the practice squad, and then Miami was picked him
right up.
But he does have a place here. That's role positions for a guy like Jack Stahl. Steve?
Guys, I am going to talk about Cam Jordan. Had a nice game, week one for the black and gold. 1.5 sacks, now puts his total at 123. Gentlemen, he is now tied 20th, not for the Saints, 20th all-time in the NFL with Robert Mathis at 123. Curious to see how far Cam can climb up this ladder for the all-time sack list in the NFL. The only one currently still active that's on here right now is a few ahead of him with 129.5, Von Miller. Curious, like I said, continuing to see Cam, you know, rising those levels as he does after he gets his sacks, seeing if he can rise levels on the all-time sack list. Right now, 20th overall. The leader, he's not going to catch Bruce Smith at 200, no. But curious how many more he can get and where he ends up after this season.
Yeah, he didn't play like no old pops.
right.
Yeah, he let me know, man. He said, I heard you say that a few times about them old pops. He said, hey, I'm not no old pops. And so, man, he didn't play it this past week against the Cardinals. Charlie?
Guys, we got an email from our friend Bill Frankes over at the LSU baseball department talking about the upcoming schedule for the 2026 season for your defending champion LSU Tigers.
Pretty wild SEC schedule, Charlie.
Yeah, we'll dive into that in just a second. Obviously, like, I mean, this has been the case for years now, but LSU's non-conference slate isn't that exciting. They have the Live Like Lou Jacks College Baseball Classic where they take on Indiana, Notre Dame, and UCF. So, you know, a couple decent opponents there. Outside of that, once again, the non-SEC slate's not very impressive. But then you get into their 10-week SEC schedule, and it is quite tough, guys, based off of recent history with some of these programs. They start out at Vanderbilt, a team that they really haven't played in recent years, which I think is pretty interesting. They host Oklahoma. They host Kentucky, another team that's been very good in recent years. At Tennessee, that's always going to be tough. At Ole Miss, Texas A&M at home, at Mississippi State, South Carolina at home, which should be kind of the easier weekend series there. At Georgia, once again, going back to what I had said with Vanderbilt, a team that they haven't really played that often. And then at home against Florida to wrap up the season, guys. So 2026, that SEC slate for LSU and Jay Johnson is going to be very, very interesting to follow.
Our buddies at AYS Sports, guys, they put out there too after the schedules came out for Arkansas. No LSU, no Texas, and no Tennessee. What?
That's kind of. I almost used that one. So I saw it too, Steve. Here's my thing. Fighting complacency. Because this 2026 LSU baseball team looks loaded.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to be mindset here. Now, listen, you got to have a little luck. People say, well, right, you make your own luck. Okay, that's true. But sometimes you know, luck comes your way. You don't make all your luck. You sometimes get it in that spot. Man, LSU has got a team that is really, really going to be good in 2026. Got to fight off complacency.
When Jay, we trust, you know that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think this may be more of a mental type jump the ditch than it is more talent,
because
he got super talent on this team. It's going to be the mental part of this and getting hot late. That's it for our triple option feature. We'll be back to finish it off here in hour number two of Sports Talk right after this break. Finishing up here in hour number two of Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike DeTeglia, Steve Geller, Charlie Long. We'll have a lot more Sports Talk and Saints Hour starting at 7 o'clock with Saints Executive Vice President, General Manager Mickey Loomis, and Teron Armstead right after this news break.
D.C. sports fans start their day with 106.7 The Fan's Sports Junkies.
Let Jaden cook.
With Commanders Talk.
They were 60 minutes away from the Super Bowl last year, and they're better this year.
And a lot of fun.
You're acting like I haven't been embarrassed in my life before. Right.
Every morning from 6 to 10.
I thought I handled myself with incredible maturity.
If you missed it live, listen to 106.7 The Fan Sports Junkies on Apple Podcasts, Spotify.
They're listening to everything you do.
Or wherever you get your podcasts.